There are many people today who believe in salvation by technology. Now, granted, technology has enhanced our lives in so many ways. Think about the incredible leaps and bounds that have been taken in the field of medical science. Consider what that 25-year-old Hubble telescope enabled us to do, to gaze into the furthest reaches of the cosmos, to go back near the very beginning of time. You know, technology promised to make our lives better, and in a lot of ways, it's kept its promise. We are all working more efficiently these days because tasks that used to take days or weeks or months can now be done in mere seconds. But while simplifying our lives, we also know, don't we, that technology has also complicated our lives, because having more time at our disposal is good, but not if we fill the excess capital with more work, or feel the compulsion to fill in all the white spaces on our calendar, which leads us to wear out and stress out and burn out. And so as we wait for the next digital device to come around the corner, there is also a part of us that wants to cut the clutter and edit the excess and the extras and lead simpler, more centered lives. Now, some of you think I'm a foodie, and you can call me what you want. I don't care. I love to cook and I love to eat, but I want to clear up a misconception. My main fare is not highbrow food. I live for made from scratch comfort food. My idea of the ideal meal, which I ate last week, consisted of deep fried fish, fried potatoes and onions, asparagus, are you with me so far? Creamy coleslaw for dessert, big warm brownie with three scoops of premium French vanilla ice cream with a river of fudge oozing down the sides. I'm not highbrow. I know how to eat the simpler things. It was the old Shaker hymn that says, "'Tis a gift to be simple." And simplicity is better than complexity. Bigger isn't necessarily better. Sometimes less is more. And Jesus said, when life has you bent out of shape, and when you're all out of sorts, don't go back and check your investments. Don't make sure you're current on your insurance policies. Look at the birds of the air. Consider the lilies of the field. A sculptor chisels away everything that is unessential to his creation. I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way, but sculptors decrease. They don't increase. Imagine you are standing next to Michelangelo as he studies this big block of granite, and you ask him what he's doing, and he says, King David is in there, and I'm going to pound and chip away until there's nothing left but King David. You see, it's all about pounding and chipping away at the non-essentials to get straight to the heart of the matter. And if we chip away, or if you prefer the metaphor, if we dig deep beneath everything that Jesus said and did, we will come across that one holy passion that governed his life. Love. Jesus and the disciples were having their last meal, and all that Jesus had taught, all the disciples needed to know, would have to be packed into a very constricted time. Chapters 13 through 15 in the Gospel of John chronicle that conversation. And as you read these poignant chapters, there is a theme that emerges. Behold, I am giving you a new commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. Those who love me will keep my word. My Father will love them, and we will come and make our home with them. As the Father has loved me, I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No greater love is this than a person lay down their lives for another. There was a Roman philosopher who wrote disparagingly about this new religious sect that had cropped up in the empire. And he called the people who belonged to it depraved and stupid. But in the midst of his scathing criticism, he said there was nevertheless something about this sect that distinguished it from any other group. He went so far as to say the world has seen nothing like it. You may remember the words. He said, "See how they love one another." It was a new thing, the likes of which the world had not seen before. Jesus gave a new commandment, and I could imagine an observant Jew listening to him saying, "Oh, just what we need, a new commandment, as if we don't have enough already. Now he wants us to love one another." But this isn't a commandment layer cake where he's simply adding another layer. No, this is the commandment par excellence. Do what I have done for you. If you do this, Jesus said, my Father and I will make our home in you as I have loved you love. How many of you ever have seen the film Hurricane? Not about the storm, but about Hurricane Reuben Carter, who was a champion middleweight boxer who was wrongly imprisoned for life for murders he did not commit. Every appeal was turned down, so he told his wife to divorce him, to get on with her life. He said, "Forget all about me because I am a dead man." And during those years of imprisonment, he read and he studied voraciously. And he wrote a book about his life, which just happened to turn out to be a bestseller. However, it didn't stay in the public's eye very long. Several years later, a black teenager in the ghetto named LaSara Martin picked up a copy of the book, and he was moved by it. And so he started a correspondence with Hurricane Carter. And the two became very close, and that relationship involved such that LaSara played a key role in overturning Reuben Carter's conviction. And Hurricane told LaSara that it was no accident that he picked that book up at the bookstore. And then he quoted from Genesis 49 about himself. "Reuben, my firstborn, preeminent in pride, unstable as water, you shall not prevail." But then he told LaSara that his name was a form of Lazarus, the man that Jesus raised from the dead. Hurricane told LaSara that hate had killed Reuben and buried him, forgotten in the walls of that prison, but Lazarus' love raised him from the dead and had given him life again. He enabled Reuben Hurricane Carter once again to know what love is all about. You know, I know that it's very easy to look at the state of the world around us and to conclude something other than love. One historian said that history is little more than the register of crimes and follies and the misfortunes of humankind. The 20th century saw some of the most incredible quantum leaps in knowledge and in discovery, and yet at the very same time, did you know that the 20th century was the most violent century in the history of the world? Anybody know where the writer Kurt Vonnegut is from? Indiana. Listen to what he said. All great literature is about what a bummer it is to be a human being. Moby Dick, Huckleberry Finn, the Iliad, the Odyssey, Crime and Punishment, the Bible, and the Charge of the Light Brigade. What a bummer it is to be human. You look at the present state of the world, and do you conclude love? And if you do, where is it? When governments tell their citizens to hate and to kill, a world where the Israelis hate the Palestinians, and the Palestinians hate the Israelis, and the Ukrainians hate the Russians, and the Russians hate the Ukrainians, and half of the world hates the United States, and Sunnis and Shias and Kurds hate one another, and ISIS hates absolutely everybody other than their own, and they are content to blow themselves to smithereens and take as many with them as possible. Where is love? Look at nature and tell me, where is love? It's very easy for me to be all gushy and romantic last week about the sandhill cranes and the eagles and the bear and the cub we saw and the fabulous fishing. But full as nature is of wonder and beauty, a poet has also said that it is red in tooth and claw. The lion eats the lamb for lunch. The big fish swallows the little fish. The female praying mantis devours her unsuspecting mate. Cancer declares war on good people. Aneurysms burst. And tornadoes and earthquakes and tsunamis and asteroids and global warming and foot fungus all around us. Where is love? Take a look at the religions of the world and say, what about them causes you to conclude this love? When people whose beliefs are different are persecuted because they are a threat to our perception of the truth. Terrible things have been done throughout history, even today, to those who are labeled infidels and heretics and blasphemers. Wars are waged in God's name. We put bumper stickers on our cars that say, God bless our troops, when God has nothing to do with the wars of this world, and God does not desire to bless the troops, but to bless every person on the face of this earth. No love here either. See, the world never knew love until he came. The message was foreign. Love the unlovable, pray for your enemies, receive the rejected, forgive sinners, teach that the life pleasing to God is not based upon following a law, but living the law of love. He died to demonstrate that this love is stronger than death, and he did it to restore that friendship that existed in the beginning in the garden, which we screwed all up because we wanted to be gods of our own. Have you ever imagined what it would be like to have a friend in high places. Imagine that you are at some gala party. Bill Gates is there, and he comes up to you, and he puts his hand on his shoulders, and he says, "There's somebody I'd like you to meet." And he takes you over to this silver-haired gentleman, and he says, "Warren Buffett, I'd like you to meet my good friend, Tom Dawson." I know it's a stretch. We're imagining this. Imagine that the Rolling Stones are getting a lifetime achievement awarded at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and Mick Jagger gets up to give the acceptance remarks, and he thanks the Hall of Fame, but he said there is an even deeper debt of gratitude that the Stones offer for creative inspiration, and that is to a phenomenal guitar player in his own right, David Bibby. Won't you please come up on the stage and savor this moment with us? Well, we imagine what it's like to have a friend in high places, but I'm here to tell you, you already do. We have a friend in the highest of places. One who says he's our friend. He calls us to do what he said, because I am giving you a new commandment that you love one another. It's just that easy. It's just that hard. It was the 100th anniversary of the arrival of the first missionaries in Zaire. There was a party that lasted for days, music and dancing and food and fellowship and preaching. And there was a time when everybody gathered around and they told the stories of how God's goodness was evident in the life of the church that grew in that place. And as they were ready to finish, a very old man said he wanted to speak, because he had been carrying a secret for years and years that he did not want to take with him to the grave. When the first missionaries arrived, he said, "We didn't know whether we wanted to believe in Jesus or not." And so this man, along with others, devised a plan to slowly and secretly poison all the missionaries. One by one, the children and the adults died. And when people saw how they died and how they conducted themselves in that process and how they loved one another and how they loved all those people, those people of Zaire decided, "We are going to become Christians." The missionaries didn't know they were being poisoned. They didn't know they were dying. They were doing as they were told. They loved Jesus. They loved each other. They loved the ones to whom they were sent. Do you have any clue that every day someone is watching you? Well, they are. You know, especially when we get hit by what my mentor called the vicissitudes of life, especially then people will take notice and they all watch to see you and to see what difference, if any, your faith in Jesus Christ makes. They're going to watch you to see if you hold fast or whether you will fold like a fellowship hall chair. They're watching to see if you live love and give love and receive it on the hard journey through life. And Lord knows that it's hard a lot of the times. Let me take you back to the time after Peter's denial of Jesus, after the crucifixion, after the resurrection, after Jesus had fished a wonderful fish breakfast for the disciples who fished all night and came back fishless. And in the course of that breakfast, Jesus walked up to Peter and said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, I love you." And then Jesus added, "Tend my lambs." But later, Jesus came up to Peter and said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." "Then feed my sheep." And the third time, Jesus came to him and said, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And Peter is now perturbed. Maybe Jesus has hardening of the arteries. "Look, Lord, we've covered this twice already. I'll say it again. You know it all, Lord. You know that I love you." And Jesus said, "Feed my sheep."